The DeFalco Files is an entertainment-based program. Some memories of certain events might be fuzzy. All opinions are that of the host. Content might not be appropriate for children and some adults. Listener discretion is advised. And remember, the truth is here. Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting presents The DeFalco Files with FSW owner Joe DeFalco and your host, Matt Michaels.
Hey everybody, it's Matt Michaels here on The DeFalco Files with the owner and creator of Hey everybody, Matt Michaels here on the DeFalco Files with owner and creator of FSW, Future Stars of Wrestling here in Las Vegas, Mr. Joe DeFalco. Joe, how you doing today?
Actually, I'm doing pretty shitty, but other than that, I'm doing good.
That's ominous, to say the least. Are you okay?
Oh, no, I'm fine. Just some issues happened earlier today, and you know, a lot of times people like to blame others, and we got a situation going on that probably best if I didn't elaborate on.
Yeah,
but it's just disappointing.
I only ask just because you know, I'm always concerned when you say you're feeling crappy because of your past and you know, heart issues. So
health-wise, I'm good. I'm good health-wise.
Good. And
my A1Cs are down.
Nice. Good. Yeah. Good.
Yeah, good number. 7.6, they said. So,
hey, nice. Good job, man. You know, speaking of numbers and being consistent and being around for a while, today we have a guest who all of that applies to when it comes to FSW, and that is half of Death Proof. Maybe you know him as Jay Cafe, but it's Jacob Austin. Young Jacob, how you doing, man?
I'm doing really well, man. I just want to say thanks for having me onto the podcast. I've been listening into the DeFalco Files for a while now, and I was actually pretty itching to get on because I felt like I had a lot to talk about, you know, my history with FSW.
Awesome, man. And I know that your name comes up a lot when we are talking. Joe has a high respect for you. And do you remember when you first encountered Joe DeFalco?
You know, I was anticipating this question, and I don't remember our first meeting just because it was so long ago. And I think because it took a while for me to warm up to Joe, just because I think I looked at him as, you know, as the boss, you know, and I was very like timid when I first started. So I don't really remember it being like a big instance because I just started as a student at the school.
Joe, what are your first memories of Jacob?
What I thought of him was he was the first guy that moved to Las Vegas to train with us at FSW. You know, from what I understand, he used to go to some of the shows down in Arizona, and I believe he was talking to a guy like Kid Vegas and a couple others, and you know, Clutch followed suit after, but Jake was the first guy who packed everything up and said, fuck it, I'm coming to Vegas.
Wow. And how old were you, man, at that point?
So when I first moved to Vegas, it was a week after my 19th birthday. So wow. I graduated high school in 2011. And then within about 2 months, it was again, my birthday's in July. You know, it was a week after my birthday that I'd moved into, the double wide trailer with Hefe.
Oh yeah, I remember that. I dropped you off a couple times.
Yep.
What was that experience like for you? Did you have any kind of roots, any kind of base here in Las Vegas, any family, or was your anticipation that FSW and the wrestlers, the boys, would kind of fill that role of family? And even though it was Arizona, you'd still be fairly close. 19 years old, that takes a lot of balls to, you know, just uproot and go for it.
Yeah, I didn't have any, there's no family for me out here, and I didn't get as close with some of the local talent as I am now until like a little while later. So I was just kind of offered to me. Hefe offered his place to me, and I just kind of took it because I just wanted the chance at wrestling.
Sure.
So it was a kind of a risk, but it was kind of like I had this moment when I was in my senior year high school where I wanted to try to go after wrestling and see what would happen. I had no expectations of like if I was going to be good at it or if not, but it was really a decision to me to be like, I'm going to try this because if I don't, I'm going to regret it. And it's worked out so far.
Isn't that always the case too? You know, where you find yourself, you see something that you love and you just have to, in good faith, try it, or else you're going to kick yourself in the ass that you didn't try it. Now, Joe, when you saw him training in the ring, and you got the feedback from the trainers, was Jake the kind of person who showed the desire and passion that goes along with, you know, being a 19-year-old kid who's just like, fuck it, man, I'm going balls to the wall?
Well, initially you could see that there was talent there, but he was very, very green. I would say by the time he had his first match, we had the idea, him and Greg Romero kind of came up in the same class, I guess you can say. Clutch Wow. was also in that same year.
Wow.
And, you know, I had this idea, you know, they're going to be the young stallions of FW, you know, and I'm like, hey, I got this great idea. We call him because it was Gorgeous and Young, you know, because Greg Romero went by Gorgeous Greg Romero and Jacob Austin Young, and they were Gorgeous and Young. And, you know, we were excited. We were waiting for the GAY chance, and they were going to be this uber baby face up and coming upstarts. And, you know, the way things work out, unfortunately, the ideas in your head don't always pan out to the ideas that actually occur, you know. And, you know, it's kind of crazy, you know, looking back at that to see the progression that Jake has made. You almost have to chuckle when you think of some of those early Gorgeous and Young matches, usually at a dark match at the Silverton.
Wow. Well, at least you got to wrestle at the Silverton early on. What are your memories of teaming with Greg? And, you know, being young, being green, was it something that you were working through the process of understanding the psychology? Was it something, getting used to being in front of a crowd? And how are the veterans towards you guys, because here you guys are the young bucks, essentially, copyright infringement not meant, but getting a chance to at least be on a casino show and get some experience.
Yeah, so like thinking back on it to when I started and like how we got paired up together, I remember the first Sam's Town show was August of 2011. And I remember because I wasn't – that first show I wasn't on. I was actually helping cleaning – like the young students now, like on shows before they get on, they'll like help out with like spills around, you know, Sam's Town, like right. Help picking up and guiding people and stuff like that. And I remember seeing that there. And then it was shortly after that that me and Greg started getting paired up together because both like kind of brown-haired white guys, so kind of like fit real close together. So, and tagging with Greg was fun. We both had like I think looked at it very positively, but I think both of us really had different ideas for what we wanted to do.
Sure.
Especially with the Gorgeous and Young thing, I think it's fun to like look back on now, but definitely at the time, Greg was a little bit younger than me and I was like still 19 at the time. Being called Gorgeous and Young wasn't really what we wanted. You know, you want to be a big tough wrestler, but that wasn't really who we were at the time. So I think what Gorgeous and Young could have been down the line once like me and Greg got a lot more experience. I definitely think it could have been something like pretty incredible. But I just, at the time that we were doing it, we were just so young and so green and just like didn't have the patience or the knowledge for wrestling to make it anything bigger than what it ended up being.
Sure. Joe, at what point do you, when you have an idea and you try out a concept like that, at what point do you know it's time to pull the plug and go in a different direction?
Well, when we did it, I don't know if it was the right time to pull the plug, but we would have our traditional Jack Slammy Awards, we called them, because Jack Slammy was the announcer. So it was a takeoff on the Slammy Awards. And, you know, we usually had a clear-cut guy who was going to be the Rookie of the Year. And that year, there really wasn't a clear-cut guy. And Mike Modest at the time was the commissioner. So we came up with the idea that Jake and Greg were going to have a match. And the winner would be the Rookie of the Year. And during that match, Clutch, who felt like he deserved to be the Rookie of the Year, decided to come in. And as I've told the story before, him and Jake decided the perfect finish would be Clutch hitting the Dominator on Jake. And since they never practiced it ever, pretty much fucked it up and almost broke Jake's neck.
Jesus. Oh, man. How are your memories on that, man? Was that that's tough.
Yeah, no, it's I mean, it definitely got a lot of play on the TV show. Guys like to talk about it. I know Clutch likes to talk about how it was on replayed for weeks. But like going into that, and when we were kind of keyed in on what was going to happen, Clutch and I were living together at Mike Delight's house. You might have heard of like Mike Delight's house being like a wrestler's house.
Yeah.
And so we never had worked on the move at the school. But when we came up with the idea of like the aesthetic of a Dominator on top of somebody, because it's kind of like, yeah, like flipped down on top of somebody. So that was the concept for me to get flipped onto Greg. And then it was kind of like a zig and a zag thing where he tucked in a little bit too hard and I didn't like look up. So I kind of tucked my head too. Yeah. So it just kind of like pretty much point of the back of my head hit the mat and the rest of my body fell like folded over my face like a taco.
Oh.
And it looks awful. It looks like I should have a broken neck, but honestly, I felt fine. I mean, it was pretty like dramatic. A lot of the refs came to the ring, I think, and then they were checking on me and people were asking me if I was okay. I remember Joe asking me if I was okay in the back. And I was just like, yeah, I didn't know if it was like an adrenaline thing and I was going to feel it. I think I was stiff, yeah. But honestly, like I didn't go see a doctor. I felt okay like afterwards. And they think we only kept me off shows for about a month at that time. Uh-huh. And then I started wrestling again.
Do you think that, you know, with the traction that got with the boys, do you think that going through that experience earns you just that little hair more of respect for the fact that you took it, you got back on your feet, and it wasn't like, you know, any friction from you. It was like, hey, man, now we got this guy's tough. You know, did it just kind of toughen you up, mature you, I guess?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing was everyone's just concern about me and just being like, hey, are you okay? And I was just like, I was fine. So it wasn't really like a, I never felt like it made me like tougher in the eyes of everybody. Definitely like respect, like, dang, he took that and he's, you know, still walking around. And he still wants to do it. You know, I could see. I'm sure there's like stories of people getting like a reality check in wrestling and then being like, nah, I'm good. I don't want it, you know, but I don't think for a second that after that happened, I never thought I didn't want to do wrestling. I mean, I just wanted to get back and wrestle as soon as possible.
Joe, what was your outlook? You know, we had this scenario for Rookie of the Year. Where were you going from that point with Jake?
Well, after everything that happened, the setup basically was going to be Clutch and Jake. So because of the injury, I'm pretty sure at that point that pretty much ended Gorgeous and Young, because that was the first opportunity probably for Clutch and Jake to actually be involved in a storyline instead of just some random matches here and there. You know, there was Jake and Greg doing their tag matches, and Clutch was probably, you know, in singles matches, random six-man tags. He was just trying to find a spot on the show. And, you know, Jake had the opportunity, and I don't know if it's the reason why, but I'm pretty sure he did well enough that we just kept it going where he became a singles wrestler at that point.
Was that something that you were looking forward to, or was the idea of potentially staying in a tag team or moving on to another tag team, I should say, something that you wanted? Where did you see yourself at that point?
I don't think I was seeing myself in any particular direction. At that point, I was still maybe 19 or 20. I wasn't, you know, yeah. I didn't have the wherewithal to be like, I want to do this with my career. That, like, as crazy as that, like, looked and how dramatic it was, it honestly was probably the best thing that happened to me and for Clutch as well, yeah. Because it led to us getting a program. You know, it built up to us getting a singles match at the Silverton Casino on the main card, where we had a big one-on-one match. And prior to that, I remember specifically Clutch had a No Limits title match against Remy Marcel that I got involved in. I hit him with a chair right before the big Silverton match. And then because of that match, because Clutch was in the agency with Greg Sharp, and Greg Sharp was wrestling Jack Manley for the No Limits title, or he was wrestling Jack or Remy, somebody. But because Clutch and Greg were together, I got to team up with Jack Manley, which was really a great experience. And we had a tag match at the Silverton Casino as well. So really, because of that incident, I got these two really big matches on the Silverton Casino shows, and I got the association with Jack Manley, which then would go into leading into the following stuff with Bryce.
Yeah. Joe, what do you remember about that time period of, you know, kind of leading up to the following? How was the crowd reception, you know, to what Clutch and Jake were doing? And, you know, then when you started pairing him and Manley together, was the crowd behind them, or, you know, what was actually that feeling you were getting?
To be honest with you, I don't, recall the crowd being like, oh my God, what a great tag team. It's like, you got to understand at that point, you know, that was probably his first step from just being, you know, a low card guy, happy to be on the show, to, hey, now he's kind of sniffing the mid card. And, you know, Jack came in and he got a pretty strong push. So associating Jake with Jack Manley, I would assume the crowd would feel like, hey, here's a guy we need to keep our eye on because he's getting put in good situations. You know, that's always been how I've kind of built things up, that, you know, you get a little something, and the more you do what I need you to do and you do it well, then you get the opportunity to do more things. And obviously he, Jake was at a upward trajectory, and teaming with Jack Manley now put him above a lot of other guys that he might have been, you know, struggling to get on a show. You know, there might only have been four spots for the six guys, and he'd get most of them, but maybe he didn't get all of them. And you know, there comes that time when the young guy becomes someone that I know I can utilize, you know, more frequently. And, you know, by the time we had the idea, I had the idea for the following, like I said, you know, it's crazy enough that it was because of the Kevin Bacon show that I loved the following, loved the song, you know, and we ended up utilizing it, and it became one of the big things in NFSW history to this day.
And if I correct, following went into the Hall of Fame even, right?
I think just Bryce for now.
Was it just Bryce for now?
Yeah, it was Bryce. But yeah, last year the Hater Nation went in.
Okay, that's right.
They were kind of the first, you know. They were that first faction. Like I said, there was tears in people's eyes when the Hater Nation broke up in a main event with the Dynasty, where it was all the titles on the line against basically the careers of the Hater Nation being together. And, you know, as being the first, you know, they got that initial nod into the Hall of Fame. And, you know, there's no doubt that the following will follow suit. You know, there might be three factions that get in, because there's a great chance that the Dynasty, you know, would get in. But right now, I would put the following as, you know, the next faction up when it comes to it, because, you know, everything clicked with that. You know, we had different ideas. I always talk about the guy that I try to mention on every podcast, Evan Daniels, was looked at as being the final member. But being that Jake, Bryce, Cody, they were all considered No Limits guys. Right. And Evan Daniels was considered a No Limits guy. So to have four No Limits guys, you know, you wanted to break that up. And that's when the decision got made, you know, Big Duke would be the big dude. So he's the heavyweight, which was crazy enough because he ended up being in the tag team anyway. So it was basically Bryce and Jake were like leading the No Limits division. And right. The storyline as it continued to grow was Bryce would get through every challenger he had. And the question became, who's the guy that can beat Bryce Harrison? And everybody looked at Jacob Austin Young as the heir apparent to being the guy to take out Bryce. And then because of injuries, you know, we had the defections over to the other company. And, you know, the reason why I'll always have a soft spot for Jacob Austin Young was him and Kevin Cross were the only two that did not jump ship. You know, regardless of everything that was there, those guys stayed through thick and thin. And unfortunately, we couldn't get the Bryce versus Jacob match, but we ended up having a tournament. And in that tournament, you know, Jake got to wrestle some of the best. You know, he wrestled Willie Mack and he wrestled Ryan Taylor. And, you know, and then we brought in, I remember, Rocky Romero. So, you know, him not going was a great move for him also, because he was kind of the guy that dominated the No Limits division. And, you know, he got Kenny King and Mesquite. You know, he got the best of the best in FSW at that point.
What was that time period like for you, Jake? Were you just kind of rolling with the punches and going, hey, man, this is good? Or, you know, where does it come in that, first of all, you made the decision to stay and be loyal. And how were you processing and enjoying these opportunities that you got with some great wrestlers, man?
It's a bit of a mixed bag, especially now that I have like time to reflect on it, because during it being No Limits champion, and getting all those opportunities, like Joe was saying, I got to wrestle a lot of like high level talent. And it was awesome. But having a lot of the, not only like coworkers in FSW, but friends and my peers leave, yeah, was definitely a struggle, because the guys that I would look to for advice and stuff weren't really there. So I definitely look back on that time as like good and bad, because like as the opportunities were great, I did struggle, I feel. And looking back on it now, I'm like, man, I wish I could have performed better. Like, and I don't know if that's just maybe a thing about looking back, you know, you always feel like you could perform better. Yeah. But that period of time, like, so that's pretty much post following stuff, was like good and bad. You know, like Joe was saying, I got to wrestle Rocky Romero, who's an idol of mine. I got to wrestle Kenny King at Mesquite, who is, you know, a coach at FSW, who'd been around FSW since, you know, at that point, it was probably been 4+ years of him helping out.
Right.
I got to wrestle one of my favorite wrestlers when I was watching wrestling as a kid, Paul London. I got to work with him on a handful of times. So that time is definitely, to me, it's there are really great moments, but I think there's like things that I felt like were not accomplished that I wish I would have accomplished that I'm still striving to accomplish in FSW.
Sure. You know, like you said, it was past the following a little bit. For you, what was the experience of being with the following? What did that mean to you? And how did that kind of elevate you in terms of, you know, did you start to feel more confident in your ring work at that point, being with those guys?
Yeah. So when we did the turn and I joined Bryce against Jack, and it was just me and Bryce for the first period, it was a real like confidence boost in the sense that I was a heel finally, and I could let go and kind of play with like new different things.
Yeah.
So I was still learning. And then when Bryce had left for about 6 months and came back and we brought Cody and Duke into the fold, it was like a whole nother level. It really took off. And I almost like think in the moment, I didn't realize how popular it was. Like looking back on it now, I was like, wow, we were really something, really a part of like a big feature on the show. Like I think back to the first Samstown show where there are three sections of the following on three different matches. Cody wrestled Clutch in a singles match. Me and Duke wrestled Hammerstone and Graves. And I'm pretty sure Bryce wrestled Adam Thornstow for the No Limits title. Oh, wow. So you heard the following's music three times that night. And so like for the following getting as big as it did was due to the booking. I think due to the people involved is a huge thing as well. Cause I think especially Bryce, myself and Cody, because I think we were looked at as maybe guys who weren't top level talent. Like you take Bryce. Bryce was second to Remy before he turned heel. Cody was the Mikey Whipwreck, the Brooklyn Brawler of FSW. You know, that's how he was looked at. Me and Greg Romero were getting Shawn Michaels, Marty Jannetty comparisons all the time. And then you put us in the following and we become probably one of the hottest acts of that time period, if not the hottest act in FSW.
Joe, what was your feelings on getting those guys together, and did you think that this would be something that would last, or, you know, was it something that, like you said, you got the idea through being a fan of a Kevin Bacon show, you liked the theme music. Was that just a fluke for you that just kind of happened to work?
I don't think so at all. The following is really was my baby, my idea of, hey, this thing I think can be really, really a big thing. And once Bryce left, I remember he wanted to go to Washington, D.C. I think he wanted to be the next president or something. Things didn't work out. And when we finally got him back, we had Brandon Gatson at the time was our No Limits champion. The last show Bryce did was at Mesquite, and that was when we brought in Matt Hardy versus Bryce. And, you know, I remember during the match, the idea was, hey, we're going to have Bryce go over, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's the one-off guy coming in, and somehow that finish got changed. And they both came up to me, and I always thought it was Matt initially, but Bryce felt it would be better to do down the line more of our crowd. You know, Mesquite was a mixture of a bunch of our people also, but it also featured a lot of the people who were not really fans of FSW. And what happened was, I think we pretty much learned that Bryce was leaving that day. I don't know if he told me beforehand. I don't think he did. So we ended up having Gatson, who had won the cash in the case, and Gatson cashed in. And thanks to Matt Hardy giving the twist of fate. So moving forward, most people didn't think of this as the main event, but it was like, okay, we have the idea. Bryce is coming in. At the time, Jake, you had the cash in the case at that time, right?
Yes.
So So Jake had the cash in the case. And the main event was Gregory Sharp against Brandon Gaston, who a lot of people were like, oh, you can't make that the main event. You know, there's too many other good guys. They're really not over enough. And I'm like, if we're going to do this following angle, it's going to be big and it's got to be in the main event. And I'll tell you what, those guys delivered. You know, it was an awesome match for what was there. The music hit. And I remember the unmasking as Jake passed off the case. People were kind of stunned because he's the guy with the cash in the case. Now he doesn't have it. And then all of a sudden, you know, I believe Bryce was second, correct?
So what we did was I gave Bryce my gear. So he was wearing my gear because I had wrestled earlier in the night. And then everybody else, so Cody Duke and I, were dressed in like black hoodies with these black masks and sweats, and Bryce was wearing my gear. So Bryce had the case the entire time, and then I took the mask off first, and then everybody else revealed, and then Bryce then revealed last.
Okay, there you go. And Cody was a big shocker because at that time he was, you know, as big as the baby face as you can be, who never won. Yeah. Like, he was that lovable loser, and the crowd loved Cody, and it kind of stunned them when he unmasked as part of the following. And then Bryce, who was a long reigning No Limits champion before and had been gone for so long, you know, nobody knew, you know. That was back in the good old days when people left for 6 months and then he'd say, hey, everybody, I'll be back this week, you know, come watch. So, you know, it was one of the most over moments, you know, at that time. And then once the four clicked, you know, we were able to get Shelly Martinez to become a part of it. And I remember early on, because I'd be the guys would be around the ring, but they never really worked as managers. And that was like the one thing that was lacking, was that continuity. And when Shelly came in, it really put everything into place. And at that point, you know, it was a well-oiled machine. And, you know, like you said, you know, Bryce had some great singles matches with Adam Thornstow, you know, during that time frame. So, you know, everybody's game upped, and they were by far at that point and it was hard to boo them because they were so good, you know, but they were as hot can be. And, you know, we never really got the disintegration of the following the way we wanted it to be, with Jake basically taking over the helm, you know, because we had talked at different times that Jake was going to be on the outs and Damian Drake was going to slide in. He was the new young guy that, you know, Bryce was going to make the new disciple because, you know, Jake was getting out of hand. He was getting out of line. You know, he wanted the things that Bryce Harrison already had. So, you know, it would have been great if we could have continued it. Thankfully, we were able to at least get the one-on-one match with Jake and Bryce before he, you know, packed it in. And, you know, it was a great moment. I remember my kid taking that shot that we have the poster of, you know, of the respect handshake after the match was over. And
I actually have it right there in my room.
Oh, there you go.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and that again, you know, there's moments in time in FSW that you can always remember, the special moments. And, you know, there aren't 100 of them. There's a decent amount, but that is one that, you know, will always be remembered.
How was that for you, Jake, in terms of getting a chance to follow those emotions of kind of envy, you know, setting up your character, just, you know, feeling that motivation? Was that maybe one of the first times you were getting a chance now to, like, be able to explore what it feels to have those kind of emotions associated with your character?
Yeah, so when we started doing the following, Because when you start training for wrestling and they talk about your character, and it's kind of like, sometimes it can be such an obscure thing and so hard to kind of comprehend that, like, as a young student, especially when I was like green pre-following, I didn't really understand what it meant to be a character. Once we did the following, and, you know, following is essentially a cult. It's like this idea of like Bryce's views implanted on my brain. It just, it very much like clicked with me on how to perform, how to move, and how to act as like a disciple, and how to essentially, you know, do Bryce's will for him. And then the little things that we would do, because we always knew that essentially it was going to build to me and Bryce. And so it would be a thing where Bryce won his No Limits title match and I'd grab the belt to give it to him, and then he'd rip it out of my hands. And then we'd have like a weird, you know, off moment there. And so like little details to build, because we knew that the following was going to run for a while. So we're going to do this small, slow burn. And so getting to explore that, was definitely kind of gave me a better appreciation for like how to be a character. And I don't know, with the following, it was just something that just clicked with me so well. Like, I don't know if I've been able to, like, post following, I didn't really feel like I had that much of a character after it. Cause again, everything didn't really work out that I couldn't like wrap my head around, because the following was just so good. It took me a while to kind of really kind of get my roots into something new.
Sure. Joe, what does it feel like for you when you watch something like Monday Night Raw and see that you have Seth Rollins playing the Messiah and you have a guy like Murphy playing a disciple? Is it just the fact that that type of universal theme storytelling is just something that's going to continue to just kind of show its head to wrestling? Or, do you go, hey, that was my idea, what are you guys doing?
Well, you know, the thing is, in wrestling, mostly every idea is based off a different idea. You know, there's certain things that I've done in the past that a lot of people didn't know, never saw it, you know, but it's, it stands the test of time. You know, and there's been other things that we've seen in the WWE and other companies that seem like blatant stealing, but that isn't one that I consider. You know, a lot of people say, because the connection's there from who worked TV to what, that the Street Profits are a ripoff of the Bonus Boys, the R&B. I remember... I had an idea with Cross while he was beating the crap out of somebody, as he was working his feud with Tyshawn Prince at the time. And I said, hey, I got this idea. Instead of just beating up this jobber guy, I want you to beat him up, but have a microphone in your hand. And while you're beating him, you're basically doing commentary of beating the crap out of this guy. And I'm pretty sure you're like calling him Tyshawn Prince or whatever it was. And I swear, maybe I did see it 20 years ago, but I had never really seen it. And then a week later, Sheamus was doing it on SmackDown. Now, when I looked at that, I'm like, oh, they stole that one. Because you know what? Whether they did or they didn't, it just seems awfully coincidental.
Yeah.
That they happen to do something that hadn't been done in 20 years the week after we did it.
Jake, when you finally won the No Limits Championship, what did that mean to you? And at that point, did you feel a little bit of a little bit of a pressure to now step up the game a little bit, because now you're the No Limits champion? You know, that's a pretty big honor, from where you started from to where you, you know, ended up, you know, having the belt finally.
Yeah. So winning the belt, it means a lot. It meant a lot. Because I think the No Limits title means so much to FSW. And I kind of explained this when I was previously on the podcast with the Vegas Bad Boys, but you saw so much local talent. I mean, you still do with the No Limits Championship. And it is not only, you know, because with the heavyweight title, you saw the Matt Hardys, the Brian Cages, the Sean Rickers, these guys who come in, you know, and they're big stars and they deserve that spotlight. But with the No Limits title, seeing the guys who are homegrown and become stars and who can then be main event the shows and then have matches of the year. I mean, you talk about Funny Bone and Cody Steel Cage match for the No Limits Championship. You can talk about the triple threat ladder match that Remy, Ice, and Damian just had, or if it was just Brett or Damian with Remy, or Jack Manley and Bryce's Iron Man match that they had. You know, it's just, there's so much history and so much talent has held that title that it meant so much to me to win it, because that was my goal. You know, I never saw myself as winning the heavyweight title. It's not what I wanted. I wanted to be the FSW No Limits champion because I had been around it for so long with Bryce that it was, you know, the top of the mountain for me as far as like what I wanted to accomplish. So winning it was a huge honor. And then having the championship in that time where we had the people had left FSW. So it ended up having to be me in a lot of main events. I remember being atop the card on a lot of shows at the school, you know, the Mesquites, Silverton shows, you know, and that was a lot of pressure. Looking back on it now, I definitely feel like, again, as I was talking about earlier, I could have performed more, you know, I feel like I feel like I had more to give and I didn't. And so there's a little bit of regret there, but it was an absolute honor while it was happening.
And who would you say during that run was the, I guess, most favorite person to work with, or who did you feel you had the best chemistry or matches with?
So I had two kind of like big feuds as No Limits champion. And that was with Ryan Taylor and Braden Gatson. So me and Ryan Taylor had a few really incredible matches. But me and Gatson, because Gatson was a babyface for a long time, but Gatson became a heel against me. We had a one-on-one match at Sam's Town. And then after the match, he turned on me. And then we had a rematch at Sam's Town that was pretty heated. And we were going to have a third match. But unfortunately, he had hurt his back. And we never actually got to have that while I was No Limits champion. So I had wrestled Gadsden one. My first championship opportunity was against Brandon Gadsden for the No Limits title after he just beat Bryce for it. So there was just so much history there. And Gadsden was someone who brought my game up every time that I wrestled him. And that was something that I always liked, was that he was maybe not looked at as such a bigger name, but absolutely next level talent compared to some of the guys I'd been working with locally.
Joe, what do you remember during that time period? Is there anything that stands out to you as, a particular match, or was there anything in the storylines that you felt particularly proud of, or maybe that didn't get executed, for whatever reason, that, you know, didn't go the right way or the way that you thought it was going to go?
No, I was really excited about the feud with Jake and Brandon Gatson, because Gatson is an extremely talented guy, but in some cases, character-wise, personality-wise, you know, a lot of the fans kind of wait for him to do some cool move, his cartwheel, his gymnastics style background, and he'll do some really cool stuff, but the crowd really doesn't engage him with his personality wise. And I remember when they had their match, and I've seen it because it's one of the best work my kids done in a video of putting together a package. And I remember going through a lot of the old footage and I was like, oh yeah, this was a great one. It was like, you know, they shook hands after the match. They had an awesome match, because that was one thing you knew about Jake in most cases, because he was over because he was different. You know, there's a lot of good workers, but Jake took, you know, the Finn Balor style before anybody knew who he was. You know, he was big on watching the Japanese stuff and things like that. And I just remember that Gadsden cracked the case over Jake at the stage at Samstown. And that was like the first time that Brandon Gadsden really got noticed for something other than just having a cool match.
Yeah.
And we were really excited about where that was going to go. And then unfortunately Gadsden hurt his back. And that was another opportunity, another missed opportunity that we never got to finish. Thankfully, Gadsden is back. We brought him back. He had an awesome match with Vandegrift. He got hurt. He just messaged me, and hopefully in January he feels he's ready to go again. Nice. So who knows? Maybe we give Jake a break from the tag match, and him and Gadsden could go one-on-one again.
Well, I mean, what would that mean to you if you got a chance to have that match with him that essentially, you know, has been a few years in the making and possibly could have been a match that, you know, just would never have happened again in your career, but due to circumstances now that, you know, he's back, you might get that chance.
I think that'd be awesome. Like, I mean, Gadsden, like I said, brought me to another level as a performer. Getting to do it now again, I think would be really cool because I think people don't remember at this point, because I've been tagged in tag teams for a long time now, that me as a singles competitor and what I can do. And I think Gadsden would be the perfect guy to kind of bring that out and to show everybody in Vegas what like I can do as a singles competitor. Because I mean, for pretty much the last year since I've come back to FSW, since my time in China, like I've been tagging with Cody. And then before that I was tagging with Jace and Jody as part of the Strong Style squad. So it's, I think it would be a good reminder to the audience, to the boys in the back, of what Jacob Austin Young can do in that wrestling ring.
You know he's being a little modest, because he did have an opportunity to work a singles match when Vandegrift got hurt, when we were supposed to do the number one contender match. And there was only a little taste of him and Damian Drake. But, you know, when we talk about the No Limits division, my vision of it didn't necessarily mean that the champions who got the belt fit that description. Guys like Saiku and Jack Manley and Remy, they weren't that kind of style. Jake was one of the first, and then Damian Drake has a little bit more of that explosive high-flying, you know, ability. And they didn't go very long, maybe 5 or 6 minutes, but it was one of the most entertaining 6-minute matches I have seen in an extremely long time. And, you know, those guys are going to be killing it for years to come. So, but right now, you know, Death Proof is without a doubt one of the top tag teams in FSW, along with the Unguided, Shogun and Kenny. They got to put the belts on the line. And, you know, I definitely know that there's going to be a lot more matches between guys like Death Proof and the Unguided.
Would, you know, in talking about that style of how you've always envisioned the No Limits Championship, would a Death Proof versus Unguided tag team championship ladder match be something that these guys could pull off? Do you think that their talents are on that level of a Hardy Boys versus an Edge and Christian, you know, back in 2000, 2001?
You know, I think whatever they do will work. It's kind of like, you know, if you look at them at the tag teams, they're similar but so different. You know, you got Cody and Jake, and Cody is very excitable, very emotional in the ring. Jake is more the even-keeled guy, you know, a little mellower. And it's the same thing with the Unguided. You know, you got Damian Drake, and then you got Vandegrift, who's so talented, but sometimes you forget because he's so quiet. You know, it's kind of sliding under the radar. And that's how Jake was with the Following, that it took a while and people were like, wow, this is the guy. We think he might be better than Bryce Harrison. We can't wait to see. Because before it ever happened, the fans were expecting it. Like, they were believing that Jake was going to be the guy to unseat Bryce. So, you know, talent-wise, it's crazy because when all our tag teams went to China, it really, and that's how it ended up being. It was like all the tag teams. So whether it was breaking up where Jake was involved with the Strong Style Squad, but he left. So that took out that tag team. And then Remy and Jack left. So no Whirlwind Gentlemen. The Bonus Boys left. They were gone. Damian Drake and Spider were kind of breaking up, but they both went to China too. So that eliminated them. And then we had to rebuild the tag division. Then all of a sudden, everybody came back from China. And it's like we had so many No Limits guys that, you know, there could be 12. You know, if there was a top 10, there's some great guys that were going to be left off. Yeah. So at that time, the idea was, you know, working some tags. And we knew Damian Drake and Vandergriff, who would be two of our top No Limits guys, they got put in the tag team. And Cody and Jake, who have been two former No Limits champions, you know, we saw at the reunion when the following got together for the anniversary show, you know, we saw that there was still, they still gelled together, you know, that, you know, there was something there. I remember saying, hey, you know, what do you think about keeping this up? And then all of a sudden, now they're the tag team. And it was like that was, you know, a good way to eliminate four guys in the No Limits division that would really be, you know, threats. Then we had a couple of issues with a couple of guys, and then they're gone. And it was just funny how now, out of everything, last time we had to rebuild the tag division, and now the tag division is one of the best you're going to see anywhere. Yeah. The young talent is through the roof, and then the A group is as good as any in any company that, you know, I put our top tag teams with. Now we got Ice Williams and Funny Bone, and, you know, that's huge. But there's some younger guys that we are now looking at to try to, whether it's a Brandon Gatson return, because he's a guy who could be, you know, a Nevada state champion. He could be in the heavyweight mix. We got a guy like Jordan Cruz is a guy who definitely could be an asset in the No Limits division. But now that's the, you know, that's the division that we need to build up a little bit.
What did China mean to you personally? I mean, we've heard over the, you know, the last 30 weeks that we've been doing this so far, a lot of talk about how China helped, you know, anyone who's really kind of talked about it. What did that experience mean for you, man?
I mean, from like a standpoint of like getting the opportunity to do something like that with wrestling, I meant the world, man. And that goes to Jack Manley and Raymond Marcel, as well as FSW and Joe DeFalco, to get that opportunity for us to go to do that and to travel for wrestling. You know, I've wrestled in the States for wrestling, but outside of the States, that was my first opportunity to do something. And it's such a grand scale. You know, you could go up to Canada to wrestle, and you know, it's just north of the border. If you go to Mexico to wrestle, it's just south of the border. But this is across the planet pretty much. Yeah. And that getting to wrestle and live and experience the culture that China had to offer and live in Shanghai, it was such a rad thing, you know. And it had been building, you know, we had been hearing about it for a little bit, and Remy was like, get your passport ready, and we were just kind of waiting and waiting and waiting for the opportunity to come. And when it finally came, we all just got ready and went out, you know, and it definitely had its hardships for everybody. But I definitely feel like as an experience, like I took away so much from it. And I'm so like appreciative of that opportunity.
But the food did suck, though, didn't it?
So in Shanghai, it was okay, man. We had like Starbucks and McDonald's and KFC. But when we went to like other cities that didn't have nothing, man, it was rough.
I thought it was called KFP. It was Kentucky Fried Pigeon.
You know, having that experience, was there, did you like get closer to any of the guys while you were over there? Did you kind of, you know, get a chance to get closer relationships with guys like Cody?
Well, Cody, unfortunately, was not over there.
Okay. All right.
But so we we all had an apartment. So like Hyperstreak was there, but I had been living with Hyperstreak for a long time. He ended up living in that Wrestle House for a while. Damian Drake and Spider Warrior were over there, so we got to hang out with them a little bit more. So, but we've always been like close, I would say, you know, as well as the Bonus Boys and Remy and Jack, you know. So I think I tried to interact with the OWE students as well as Seema, T-Hawk, Lindemann, and Yamamura from Dragon Gate.
Yeah.
Just to take that opportunity to learn, because like we would have classes where Seema was teaching, and that opportunity doesn't come every day, you know. So I know for myself and Hyperstreak, we've definitely jumped at that opportunity to learn from him.
And when you look at getting back to the States, were you just roaring to go, or was there still part of you that's like, hey man, I kind of want to go back for a little bit and stay a little longer?
Well, that was the thought. So I did two trips. We did April to June of 2018. And then we did, I did August, like early August to November, late November. And I only came back because I was going to work the Royal Rumble weekend in Phoenix.
Oh, nice.
And, I was just going to have that experience. I had some buddies who were working at WWE at the time, TJ Perkins and Lindsay Dorado. So I was going to, you know, go do that. And then things didn't work out as far as like going back to China. And so then I kind of had to reevaluate what I was doing with my wrestling career, and kind of start, not necessarily back from scratch, but, you know, kind of pick up where I left off. Cause it was like, you know, I didn't know exactly where the landscape was left. You know, I had a little bit of a run, not even like a run. I think I maybe did two matches for FSW when I had the time off in between the tours, but I really just kind of helped out, finish the stuff with Jason Jody as the referee in their match. And I got to work Jungle Boy in a triple threat. But other than that, there was just, you know, it was kind of like being reintroduced to FSW. And that's what led into the Death Proof stuff.
You know, one of the best things about Death Proof is watching Cody, you know, he
go berserk on the sidelines.
It's just, there's so many great things to watch about him. What is it to you firsthand when you're standing in a cage, you're having this great match with RMB, and here's Cody taking a fucking stapled dollar bill to his head? I mean, how is that when you look at it and go, I mean, would you say you're as crazy as Cody sometimes?
No, absolutely not. not even close. And it's honestly, I know it's like, it's probably like a shock for people to see that happen, but man, I've seen Cody. Like, I think of two other matches specifically, I think were pretty intense that I've witnessed, was the, like I mentioned earlier, Funny Bone and Cody in the cage for the Nolan's title. But before that, this incredible tag match with Big Duke and Cody versus the Whirlwind Gentlemen in a street fight at Sam's Town. And there was a barbed wire baseball bat that I'm pretty sure ripped Cody's face bloody. So it was like, wow. As unfortunate as I was laying under a chair being choked, watching Cody getting money stapled to his head, it honestly didn't feel that different than things I've seen before.
Joe, how have you felt about their work in terms of when you saw the reception and you wanted to keep them together? Did you think that they would really be as successful? Because one of the things I think that you can't deny is that their chemistry is really fucking good, man.
Well, it was great from the following. You know, there were times where toward the end where Cody and Jake did team up. You know, I remember at Silverton, we had to do a number one contenders match because Duke ended up going over there. And then he decided he didn't want to work our shows also. Oh, I can't take this booking, can't take that booking. So I remember Jake and Cody worked a tag match there. And the chemistry was always there. The one thing you got to understand was when a lot of the guys came back from China, they didn't know they were coming back. So they were kind of in, they were kind of out, they were going to be around for a little while, then they were going to go back. And it was a struggle a little bit because we had new guys, you know, the 1% put together and they became a dynamic tag team. And then all of a sudden, hey, the Whirlwind Gentlemen are back full time and the Bonus Boys are back full time. And now all these guys are fighting and scraping, and it's like, you know, all we've done for FSW, this is all we got this time, you know, because we've had a long-standing relationship with all these guys, you know, and you can't just plug and play. There's got to be rhyme and there's got to be reason. So when you don't know, Damian Drake was the same way. Damian Drake was about to leave, and basically that day something happened and he didn't go. And then all of a sudden he became, at that time we had the match of the year with him and Chris Bay. And the idea was going to do a best of five, best of seven. And then it was like, oh, I'm leaving next month. I'm like, well, that ain't going to fucking happen. You know, why give them stuff that it's not going to reach the finish.
Right.
So we had Hyperstreak. We had Jake. You know, we had, you know, Remy and Jack. We had the Bonus Boys. We had Damian Drake. And was there anybody else? Like, Spider was back already by then, I think. He didn't last very long there.
Bugatti. Bugatti and Maserati.
And Nick Bugatti.
Yeah.
So now we've added some major talent. Like, when those guys, before they were in China, Royce Isaacs and Jarrell were kind of like, you know, bouncing around, not really doing a lot in singles. And when I needed the tag team, I saw these two guys and I'm like, hey, I got this idea. And I've always had good ideas with tag teams. In other words, you know, I put Hammerstone and Graves together, you know, and the 1% were a team that really, they really gelled. You know, you could put people together, and if they don't really want to do it, they're not going to do it. We've had numerous tag teams, Jake knows, that we put together that they were so interested in being single stars that they didn't really want to work the tag. And to be honest, they weren't good enough to be single stars. So they kind of just fell by the wayside. So when all this occurred, it was like, okay, now we got to get Bugatti back in the mix. We got to get Jake back in the mix. We got to get the Whirlwind Gentlemen in the mix. We got to get the Bonus Boys in the mix. And that takes time because, you know, I'm a loyal guy. And I love these guys, and, you know, they went to China flying the FSW brand. But just because they came back doesn't mean I'm going to take Tito and Che and say, hey, I'm not using you guys no more. Hey, 1%, you're going to drop the belts to the guys who came back from China. Thanks for those 10 months of killing it and getting over. No, I have to figure out a way that everything goes together. Yeah. And, you know, as Jay can tell you, you know, our roster has always been that way, where there's so much talent. And then you got to influx the kids from the school who are now ready for matches.
Yeah.
So there were times like Tito and Che don't get on shows because I'm trying to get Laz and Adriel on the show. And to just have Tito and Che work a one-off isn't beneficial to either one of us. So now we're trying to get Laz and Adriel work, and the Suavecitos and Sky High, and all these young teams have gotten better. Like Jake will tell you, you know, from the first match he had at a dark match at the Silverton, if he didn't get those matches, it would have taken him a lot longer to get to the level he was, you know. And even now we got, you know, Class out of Arizona, Jordan Cruz, you know. We've brought in some talent. Tito Escondido is going to be back at the next show. We got Brian Pillman. Like, we're always loading up with really good guys. Wise Guy, he had a great match with Hammerstone. Wise Guy is like one of the most underrated, unknown talents on the West Coast. Yeah. Guy's in phenomenal shape. He can work. You know, he looks great. And it's just because there's so many guys, it's hard for him to get over. Because our fans are very fickle. Our fans want to see their guys. Yeah. So until a Wise Guy is perceived as their guy, like Hammerstone and Graves are our guys. They're out of Arizona, but they have been such mainstay in FSW, they're like local talent. And that's what we're trying to do with getting the Wise guys and getting Gatson back and Jordan Cruz and Class. And then you mix them in, and there's like, you know, some really good young talent. No Limits champ Ice Williams, you know, he, you know, Funny Bone's in the best shape of his life, and he's been doing it for 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I'm putting the shows together, and it's like, fuck, I don't got a spot for this team. I don't got a spot for that team, you know? And it's just like just trying to scramble and, you know, get the best TV product going, because the main thing is, you know, because of the injury with Death Proof and the Unguided, you know, they're not even on the first 2 weeks of TV. We're hoping on the second week we can do some video packages, maybe show something from the singles match between Jake and Damian Drake. But the bottom line is, we don't want to see the Unguided and Death Proof on once every 5 weeks.
Yeah.
So now it really tightens the screws, because we, with the first week we put it together, we did five matches, and it was like, it was too much. Like, we're over on the time. We didn't really get to put together many vignettes and promos. We only had a couple. And now moving forward, we're only going to have four matches. Well, when you got 25 guys, you know, four matches, you're lucky if you're going to be on once every 3 weeks. Well, if we're trying to grow and be this huge company and grow from where we're at now, you know, you need to see Hammerstone more than once a month.
All right.
So, you know, so it's just really complicated no matter how you go, because we do have that much talent, which is extremely crazy.
Yeah, it's exciting as well, from a fan's perspective.
Well, yeah, the show on Saturday night, from top to bottom, you know, we had the Unguided and the Death Proof. We had Kenny King against Damian Drake. We had Ice Williams against Funny Bone. You know, Hyper Streak in the semifinals with Watson. Remy and Nino Black was really good. You know, we had 10 matches on that show. We've had the Battle of the Young Guys, Class and Jordan Cruz. You know, it was difficult to get some people on, but the 10 matches, Daivari showed up, you know, and they worked an angle with where Hero Lou was in a six-man with Hyper Streak and Daivari against Lights, Camera, Faction. And it's like everything is telling a story of what we're doing, but you don't want people to forget the story because, oh, wait, by the way, Death Proof ain't on for two more weeks.
Right.
So it's just trying to juggle everything.
Jake, from your perspective of, like you said, you lived with a guy like Hyper Streak for a long time, is it encouraging to you to know that guys like Hyper Streak are really just kind of coming into their own right now, and, you know, yourself included, that you're at the point where the next, you know, 5-6 years of your career is going to be, you know, something else, where you're going to be mixing it up with a bunch of people who are coming into the start of their prime of their careers? Does that motivate you and excite you?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd say it excites me. I think something that FSW provides is a really good foundation for the young talent to really grow. And you can see that in the guys like Cody, myself, Greg Romero, yeah, as like a class together. And then you could look at guys like Nick Bugatti and Chris Bay, as guys who kind of came up, Kevin Cross as well. And then even now you look at the teams like the Suavecitos, Sky High, Laz, and Adriel, these that are really kind of, they have a great foundation in wrestling, and then they have this chance to wrestle TV and develop these characters. You know, I think it's a great foundation for the talent to start to explore. And having had that for so many years, I've only gotten to become better myself. Hyper Streak has gotten better himself.
Yeah.
Nick Bugatti has gotten better himself because of those things and because of the people that we have as trainers. Kenny's, again, I'm going to credit Remy Marcel, Jack Manley, and Saiku majorly for my own influence. A lot of guys are probably going to say that. Throw in Mike Modest as well. When I first started, Mike was the one training me. So I think that's what FSW provides. And whereas, like, you might see some crazy athletics. You know, the roster is very diverse in like talent and what people can do. Right. But I think the one thing that remains is everyone is always really good at what they do, whatever that may be. You know, right. You look at a guy like Nick Bugatti. And here's a little fun tidbit. Nick Bugatti and I went to the same high school. Oh, Nick really? Came to FSW because his sister and I were in the same class. And he was a year older than I was. But because his sister saw my Instagram about me wrestling, he found out about FSW and came to FSW.
Wow.
You know,
well, I'm glad Jake didn't know about the commissions that we gave to people who brought in new students. I would owe them like 15%.
Man, I wish. I just showed up and he was there. And I was like, what's up? We were on the high school wrestling team together, just, you know, but like you know, like Nick is just really good at what Nick does, you know? Yeah. And I think that's for everybody. Like Hyperstreak is probably the best at what he does and being that fiery baby face fighting, you know, yeah. I don't think anybody does it better than him.
Yeah. You know, I'll ask a little bit, at what point did you really start committing to the idea of trying the Jay Cafe character? And do you feel that that is just a heightened aspect of yourself?
So Jay Cafe came about because of going to China. So to go back a little bit, when we were doing the Strong Style Squad, I didn't really have anything to kind of character-wise. Again, this is post-following. I had won the No Limits Championship, and after I lost the No Limits Championship, I didn't have anything other than I'm Jacob Austin Young. I've had good matches, but there was no character,
right?
You know? Getting paired with Jace and Jody around that time was the hipster talk, because I, as Joe has said, I had this interest in wrestling that was different. So like the Japanese style or old British stuff or anything like that. So because it was just a little different, I got labeled as a hipster. So I leaned into that. And then that was part of my character as part of the Strong Style Squad. Then going to China, they don't know what hipsters are. So then you have to adjust it. Well, everyone knows coffee, and that's where it came about. And I want to say it was probably Jack Manley making jokes about the name, and I think he said Jacob Latte. And then the transition to J Cafe is just, it's a smoother name, J-Y, so J. And that's kind of just where I started to develop that. And it really didn't get to polish it up in China as much as I'd like. I really got to do that once I came back and started working for Championship Wrestling from Arizona, because that's primarily where I'm that kind of character. Jacob Austin Young and Jay Cafe are different performers for two different shows. And I was kind of like, because I'd worked on it for such a long time, coming back to FSW, I was kind of like, I want to do this Jay Cafe thing. But after this like year or so with Cody, I've kind of realized, I'm like, no, Jay Cafe isn't like an FSW thing, at least. Not with Death Proof. Death Proof is Jacob Austin Young. And so that's why I've kind of tried to lean away from it. You know, it's like, it just isn't the right fit right now.
Well, in China, like you said, they don't really know about hipsters, but they know about hackers. You could have did the hacker gimmick before anybody else.
Oh, yeah, man. I could have beat...
They love hackers in China.
They obsessed with phones and technology. It's awesome, though.
I mean, Joe, does that really, really play to the fact that Jake is that good, where, you know, a lot of times you'll see if someone goes to, you know, Hollywood or to Arizona or something, you'll see a similar character to what they're doing pretty much, you know, no matter where they're going. For Jake to do two diametrically different characters, does that just play to his strength as a guy who fucking gets it?
I'll be the first to admit, I was not a fan of the Jay Cafe thing. You know what I mean? I pushed, and it was the Jacob Austin Young, and I felt there was definitely more to go, but I, you know, he felt stagnant. And, you know, I'm willing I've always been willing to give the talent the opportunity to try things. You know, whether I think it's going to work or I don't think it's going to work, it doesn't matter. You know, just as if we're talking about, hey, what are we looking for in the finish? What are we looking for in the thing? And if I say, well, I kind of want to see this, that, and the other thing. Well, a guy like Remy will always have a different idea, okay? And the thing is, if we're doing the match and Remy's talking with Jake or Cody and they come up with an idea, like I said, if the idea that they have is similar to the idea I have and it's going to take us to where we need to go, I am the first person to say, let's go your way, because I feel they are more invested in it, that they will do what they need to do because they want to prove, hey, Joe, maybe he'll listen again next time. I gave him, you know, we went with my idea. And, you know, there's times we did stuff and it's like, yep, you guys really shit the bed. I guess I should have did it my way. But you know what? You live and you learn. You know what I mean? We're trying to do the best we can. And for these guys, they need to be creative and be a part of the process.
Yeah.
You know, part of the process, now you're really, really invested on what we're looking to do. And not that I think people were going to work harder, because I think when they're in a match, they're going to do the best they can anyway. But maybe subconsciously they're like, hey, you know what? You know, I really need to do this. You know, I told Joe this way will work a little bit better. And because they know if it doesn't, I'm going to be the first one to say, well, that fucking sucked, you know. But I always look to give opportunities for these guys to creatively come up with their own idea for what we're trying to do. It's like, hey, this is what I want to get to. How can we do that? And when it came to his character, it was like, you know, I guess maybe because I'm 55 years old, you know, the hipster thing didn't do much for me. You know, I thought there was more character in what he was doing. But what he was doing was also something that was been done by him for 5, 6, 7 years. You know, you also need to evolve. So it's like, okay, let's try this. And, you know, he was aware enough to say, you know what, maybe that'll work if I'm doing the singles thing. But the idea with Cody or the Strong Style Squad, things are different. No. And what can I do to make things work? You know, he's one of the most talented wrestlers that we have. You know, sometimes I feel that creatively, or I think that's the one weakness he has. I've always said, I believe that Jake prefers to be Robin than Batman. Like, his strong suit has always been that best supporting actor. When he did the Strong Style Squad, he kind of came in to help Jace battle. And it helped Jace battle become much bigger in FSW. And the same thing with the Following, that without Jake as the number two guy, the Following probably would have never reached the heights that it did.
Makes a lot of sense. Jake, do you feel when you're out there wrestling, or when you're thinking about character, or when you're thinking about laying out a match, do you see yourself as a Brad Pitt, or do you see yourself as that supporting actor to a Brad Pitt?
I think it's a really awesome like comparison that Joe just made about that, because with the Following and with the Strong Style Squad, I played the back seat for other people on the show, because to me, and I think what the show, in the direction the shows were going, it wasn't for me. Like, Jace had so much fire at the time, and I got paired with them as more of a, let's turn Jace into a baby face. And then we created the Strong Style Squad. And then him and Cody went on to have an amazing, like, they had two No Limits title matches that were absolutely outstanding. And
if I could interrupt there.
Yeah.
The first match they had at the Silverton, I was doing commentary on. I was at that point, Jace was so, the crowd was so enthralled with Jace, I was trying to see if we could figure out a way to actually do a title change that match, because they were so hot for him and those near falls that if he would have actually won that night, even though when he did win, which wasn't a planned idea initially, he was not supposed to become the No Limits champion. But he caught such fire that even though it was a really special moment when he did win, that if he would have won that first show at the Silverton, the crowd would have went nuts.
Wow.
And also shout out to Ricky Tenacious, because at one time Ricky was doing the intro and he gave Jace the sickest announcement of like any like big title match I've ever heard. It was so great. But to get back to kind of what I was saying about like at those times, I felt like what was best for the show was for me to be an assistant. And sometimes I think guys forget that, like what is best for the show, because wrestling is a selfish business. You know, you're like me, 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 but sometimes you got to be about what is best for the show. And when, you know, guys talk about like not doing the same finishes on shows or what have you. And I think, as Joe was alluding to, I've sometimes limited myself because of a lack of confidence in my ability, because of missed opportunities, the unfinished stuff with Gadsden, the unfinished stuff with the following, like these opportunities that would have probably put me in positions to kind of be the big singles guy, I didn't really get to follow through on. And I definitely think pre-China, I didn't have that confidence. Coming back from China and doing J Cafe, especially in Championship Wrestling from Arizona, and then some other stuff that's locally here, I've really kind of like felt more confident as a individual. And I've been thinking about it a lot lately too, because I was saying about this feeling of regret with my No Limits title run, where I feel like I could have proved more. Like there's a desire to break out as that big single star because of that stigma that Joe was saying of like, I don't want to be looked at as a guy that was Robin. I want to be number one. You know, that's what I feel like I was meant to become as Bryce's protege. I was meant to become the big, you know, number one guy, because Bryce had it with the following, Cody had it with his order of elimination. You know, it's like, I feel in my heart of hearts that down the line, we're going to see Jacob Austin Young as a big major player as a single star. And I'm going to be damned if I don't let it happen.
That's, you know, I think one of the things you said that is just such a key is that confidence that you found, because what is amazing to watch when you walk out to the ring, and it's fun to see this because there's a lot of times when young wrestlers walk out to the ring, they're playing to the crowd. They're essentially playing to the crowd. What I see when you walk out to the ring, you're going out to win the fucking match. There's, you know, there's a drive there, and your confidence, you know, it comes to the ring with you, and that's the fucking amazing thing. And Joe was right on when he said that you and Damian, for that 6 minutes, that was one of the most intense, interesting, you know, moments of just pure fucking nice wrestling to watch. Two guys just going back and forth, man. So you should be proud on those aspects. And I love the fact that you said that you see yourself in that role eventually, you know, getting there, because you can do it, man. You really can do it. And that's what I love about, you know, what you bring to the game and to FSW. As we kind of wrap up here, do you have any DeFalco stories that you might like to share? Anything that brings to mind, either funny or something that, you know, even if it's something that Joe's instilled in you that, you know, might, you know, bring up a memory?
I think the biggest thing, especially with like my relationship with Joe, especially to go to when everybody kind of left and I was No Limits champion, a lot of the guys that did leave were trainers. And so I had to step up and start to help out with a little bit of training. And I don't think I was overly qualified to be the one training people, but I had a little bit of knowledge to help out, you know, with the school at that time. And I just remember, like, not anything specific, but just like kind of like becoming a guy that Joe would bounce ideas off of, just being there and being a part of that conversation. And to me, that I think that meant a lot because I feel like in Joe's eyes, his view of me, because it's hard. Joe DeFalco is a hard guy to read sometimes, you know. But that time period, I felt like I had earned a level of respect, you know. So I think that meant a lot to me, you know, especially because it was a trying time. I was just happy to be helpful to FSW because FSW had been so helpful to me. Sure. You know, I'm getting to do something that I wanted to do with my life, and it's because of an opportunity that, you know, they allowed me to do, you know.
And Joe, is there anything that sticks out of your mind, you know, anything that you want to either recollect or, you know, any stories that stick out in your mind, any matches that you can look at Jake and you could say that you'd like to share to him right now?
Well, there's a bunch of different things, you know. I'll always remember the Dominator. That's probably, you know, it was on our opener for about, you know, 8 months that we would continually show it. I remember the first match that I really saw his fire. We did a match at Samstown, and it was with Willie Mack. And I pulled it every once in a while. It's like, we're going to do a time limit draw. And it was a hot match, back and forth. Crowd was digging it. You know, even though it was early in Willie's time in FSW, you know, Willie's a guy people just gravitated to. So it was a really good match for Jake. And at the point, Jake was like, you guys want 5 more minutes? And then, yeah, the crowd was like so hot for it. And then basically he shut him down and walked away. And, you know, it kind of pissed him off, kind of like with his match with Damian Drake. You know, we were trying to establish certain things with the teams, and we had a hard time because, you know, Damian Drake is such a beloved character and Vandergriff is a guy who's well-liked. And we found the Unguided that despite hitting people with baseball bats and doing all the things that they do, that the crowd still gets behind them and cheers. And it's kind of like, well, you know, the really baby faces. I says, no, they just haven't had the right team. I said, let them work Cody and Jake and let's see what happens there. And immediately they were already 70-30 toward Death Proof. And then the best part of the match was the fact that it was such a great match that Damian Drake just pulled it away and then walked out on the match. That really pissed off a lot of people. And, you know, moving forward, it really established, you know, where these guys are and where those guys are. And if the Unguided becomes successful as heels, you know, Death Proof is going to be the team that got him there.
Well, as we wrap up, before we get going here, you know, Joe, you got the show coming up here on Friday that people can purchase on
Fight. Women's show, yes, yeah. Women's.
Fight TV. Tell us a little bit about what's going on and how people can purchase that on Fight. And then we'll kind of wrap up.
They can use their credit card. That's how. Take a credit card, and you go to Fight TV. It's only $9.99, by the way, for the pay-per-view. You know, and we had to mix some things up. Family emergency. Miranda Alizé is not going to be there. So the main event, Lacey Ryan is going to defend the FSW Women's Championship against Ruby Reyes. But one of the most interesting matches, you know, Katarina, WWE Impact superstar, she is going to be wrestling Estralita from CMLL. Yeah. So it's going to be the first opportunity for a lot of people to see a true luchadora from Mexico, you know, on the show. We're trying to bring in some new people. Maserati and Delilah Doom should be a fun match. Sandra Moon is going to be wrestling CC Chanel. We're going to have a couple of our younger talents, Strella and Alice Blair and Bryn Thorne out of Arizona. So she'll be on the show. And we're just continually trying to build things up because, again, with so much talent, like at our last tapings, we weren't able to put a women's match on.
Right.
But for TV purposes, now we can pull the Lacey Ryan match from the women's show and add that into one of the weeks of television. Because as FSW continued to grow in the early days, everybody universally would be like, oh man, we really love FSW, but it would be really great if you had some women. And, you know, we've kind of built it up to today where, you know, Lacey Ryan, Sandra Moon, and Maserati are as good as any other girls in a company on the West Coast. And Lacey Ryan is one of the best, period. Yep. And, you know, I hate to say it, but I really don't expect Lacey to be around FSW that much longer. You know, it's like she's had opportunities. People are looking at her, and I'm pretty sure relatively soon somebody's going to pull the trigger. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, we lost Cross. Chris Bay is on a limited schedule because of his Impact thing. Kenny in Ring of Honor, who, by the way, sometimes you forget how good Kenny King is. Him and Damian Drake was in it. But the fact of the matter is just watching how smooth Kenny King is. You know, you can watch him in training all day, but when you see him, you know, he's given 110% and he's wrestling inside the FSW arena because Vegas is his hometown and he loves to perform. And all the credit in the world for Kenny to, you know, give it his all. You know, in a lot of cases, some guys who are at that level, they're going to want to mail it in. They don't want to get hurt. Oh, they got the other companies that there are their priorities. But Kenny, since I've known him since like 1999, you know, has always been a super dude.
That's going to be exciting. And for anyone listening to this, it is this Friday, the 20th of November. It will be 7 p.m. Is that correct? Pacific time?
7 p.m., the future stars of women's wrestling.
There you go. And, Jake, before we say goodbye for this week, you know, I've never really asked anyone to do this, but do you have any words for the FSW fans?
Words for the fans? I would say with everything that's happened this year, the fact that the fans stay so attached to the show and so passionate, it's inspiring. You know, I think it makes a lot of the boys and girls in the back want to work harder. Yeah. You know, FSW has been around for a long time, and a lot of these fans have been here since the beginning. And I think it goes to show the quality of the show and the quality of the fans too, because, you know, they care so deeply about the show, you know, and they, you know, are so attached to the wrestlers and what's going to happen. So I just want to say thanks, really. That's it. You know, thank you for, you know, coming to the show, supporting the wrestlers, and for being a part of this journey, just as, you know, much as we are a part of the journey of FSW.
Especially your favorite fan, George Furman, who's loved you in every incarnation.
Yeah, George Furman, number one. Jake, well, I don't know. He might be more of a Remy Marcel fan now. I'm going to have
No. He's a Jacob. You know, he was one of the first followers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We get all the T-shirts, man. We had the Bryce's face on a T-shirt, the following T-shirts. A quick little story about that is before anybody locally was really doing merch was when I did that shirt, and then we did it in black, and that's when everybody was buying those shirts. And that really gave us, I feel like, cult status, because like you just see it in a sea of people, especially when we do that Brian Cage, Matt Hardy TLC show, that big show, just seeing how many people we had. It was crazy.
That's amazing.
Nowadays, even guys like the Suavecitos got merchandise.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if anyone is listening or watching and is not, you know, familiar with your work, I do encourage people to please tune into the FSW Twitch channel. I believe too, $5, is that correct? $5 a month, you can get unlimited access to everything on Twitch.
More importantly, if you have Amazon Prime, you can do it for free.
There we go.
You know, Amazon Prime allows you to have one subscription. Make that subscription count. You know, absolutely. We're now live, you know, 5 days a week. I make surprise appearances, talking even more than I normally do. You know, that alone is worth $5 a month.
So definitely check out, you know, what's going on through Twitch and Amazon Prime, and, you know, look up the YouTube channel, but definitely watch, you know, I'll tell you right now, man, again, the coolest thing is when you can look back at some of the matches that you've had, Jake, and it's just awesome to see your evolution and to know that you're not even close to being done is fucking exciting, man. And I want, you know, all the fans to really get to know you, because the next 5 years, brother, it's going to be very interesting.
Let me tell you something. Before we did a segment that one of my favorite things that we did, it was called From the Vault. And we had Jacob Austin Young, we had Kevin Cross, and I believe we had the Whirlwind Gentleman. And by far, my favorite one was the one with Jacob Austin Young, because being as quiet as he is and not really knowing him as a person, I think that was the perfect episode that once you watched it, you couldn't help but really like the guy. You know, super nice, super humble, you know, tremendous worker. And if you can, it is on the YouTube. It's called From the Vault with our guy David Lawson hosting. You know, check out the one with Jacob Austin Young. It's excellent.
Excellent. And on that note, ladies and gentlemen, thank you all for tuning in. Please download, subscribe, share, review. Yeah. You know, all the stuff from FSW, all the stuff from the Vegas Bad Boys podcast. And you know what?
I need money so I can pay Jake more.
Yeah.
Yes, please.
And, you know, next week, we will be bringing you another Arizona resident. Mr. Gallo will be joining us next week. So
former GQ Gallo. That should be interesting, talking about the old days at the Silver Nugget.
So that should be a fascinating talk with another great talent. And you get it right here on the DeFalco Files. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. And we'll see you next time.